And he wins it back to
Foley. Scores! No way! Oh my! No way! This with no time remaining.
Great pass from Dowdy down low, and they score! Granstrom in game number one has tied it with his first NHL goal. Wagner down the middle, scores! First career goal, Austin Wagner. Here's Loft looking for his first, scores! Matt Loft! First NHL goal, and the Kings have the lead. What's Loft got to do with it?
Hello, and welcome to Crown Conversations, a Jewels from the Crown Los Angeles Kings fan hockey blog podcast, something or another. Today with me, I have, as always, the highly esteemed, effervescent Sarah A. Welcome, Sarah.
Yo.
So on today's agenda, we are going to talk about our top five prospects. Anybody else from the rookie games who stood out, because this is the prospective. And then, this is the prospect prospectus. Prospective is the wrong word. I don't even know what these words mean. I have an obsession with alliteration, you guys, and I apologize. So we are going to talk about that. We're going to talk about prospects and camp kickoff, as well as some juicy, juicy quotes from our very favorite defensemen. But first, some news. Adrian Kempe and Jack Campbell both signed extensions with the LA Kings. Well, obviously, they're with the LA Kings. Wow. The heat has gotten to my brain today, you guys. It's been hot as hell. And anyway, so Jack Campbell and Adrian Kempe both signed extensions. Campbell signed a 2-year, $3.3 million extension. And Kempe signed a 3-year, $2 million AAV extension. So a 3-year, $6 million contract. The weird part for me, Sarah, with Kempe, is that it took so long to get this done. And then it was like, really? That's it?
Yeah, I would love to have been a fly on the wall for what made this one take so long, because he came in at about the term that everyone was sort of expecting. Everyone was expecting it to be kind of a bridge deal, because no one really knows what he's totally capable of, and no one knows what the Kings are going to look like in 3 years. And it came in a little under on salary. I think a lot of the projections had him closer to like 2.2, 2.5, something around there. So getting him in at $2 million was nice, especially if he can actually elevate his game a little better. But yeah, I have no idea why it took so long. Like who was like lowballing who? Like, did Kempe come in and be like, I want Mitch Marner money, and then they laughed at him? Like, no idea. I'm glad it got done. I'm glad it got done before camp. Like, but yeah, it really odd for a deal that seemed to be pretty much exactly what everyone thought it was going to be.
Right. And I mean, we did sign his brother, and we have Brunstrom. So we have sweets for you, Adrian. We just don't know why it took so long for this deal to get done. And so what do you think of Jack Campbell's extension? 2 years, $3.3 million, as I said. So that puts his AAV around $1.65 million.
It was a surprise. I definitely, like, whenever they announced it, I did kind of the, like, the you know when like a dog hears a noise that like it doesn't understand and it sort of tilts its head and looks at you like you've lost your mind. That's kind of the what I did when I saw this. I think it's a good move. He comes very cheap. If it muddies the waters a little bit of, you know, we thought we had the clear pathway of, you know, Campbell gets traded at the end of the season to a contender and Peterson comes up at the end of the year and then for next year. But now that he's been given a little bit of a contract extension, it puts into question kind of what the Kings are planning on doing with him. But it's such a low cap hit that he still will be very easy to move, especially to someone who wants to invest in like possibly their next starter or whatever. I don't think it locks the Kings into keeping him forever if that's not what they want to do. But if they do keep him and instead find some way to move Jonathan Quick for good or bad, depending on how you feel about that potential, then you have your starter at a very low cap hit for 2 years. So it was a little surprising, but he definitely like deserves it. He's, you know, everyone knows he's a hard worker. Like he's, you know, one of the guys that like, you know, he never quit last season, even when it was awful. You know, everyone loves him, loves being around him. So it's a nice reward for a guy who, you know, really struggled through to make it this far. But yeah, it'll be really interesting to see what happens down the road, especially if the Kings are bad this year. What players they start jettisoning to other teams, and if he ends up being one of them, or if they go bigger.
It was pointed out to me on Twitter that this could also have potential. What's the word for the Seattle?
Oh, for the expansion draft thing?
Yeah, for the expansion draft. Repercussions, I guess that's the word that I was looking for. But that's a little bit harsh of a word, I guess. But yeah, I mean, this could definitely mean something, because I think you have to have, like, so many goalies to trade. I don't know exactly how the expansion draft works. I didn't even know how it worked for Vegas. Everyone was just kind of like, I don't know, like, this is what they say, but who knows if they'll actually follow their own rules, because the NHL is, you know, they're not known for their hypocrisy or anything at all. Nope. Mm-mm. Anyway, so yeah, I mean, this could be really interesting for Jack Campbell and the expansion draft and potentially keeping Peterson around for this expansion draft. I mean, I don't really think that Seattle would be interested in any of LA's goalies, but you do have a point that at such a low cap hit, he's pretty appealing. And he's got such a sunny personality that he'd be great in any locker room.
Yeah, and so I did a little Google. And for goaltenders, teams have to expose at least one goaltender who will be under contract in the season, you know, the season prior after the draft, or who will be a restricted free agent at that time. So a team would still control their rights. So it could be a move of wanting to have all three of these guys kind of locked up for right now, so they have the flexibility to make a decision later, and then they're not scrambling, you know. If in the world where they move Quick, but they didn't extend Campbell, and then all they had left was Peterson, they'd have to like find some other goalie to expose in the draft. So it complicates things, because now there's so many more goalies to have to deal with. But yeah, the main thing is that at least one goaltender who is under contract would have to be exposed at the time of the draft. So who that will be, we'll find out.
I bet I know who it will be, but, you know, Rob Blake may change his mind in the years to come. Maybe it ends up being Peterson. Who knows?
Weirder things have happened. Maybe they trade Peterson to Boston for like a really high prospect or for like David friggin' Backus or something. And then Boston immediately gives them to like the Ducks. And then I walk into the ocean.
This is both laughing and crying. That noise that I'm making, yes, it is both laughing and crying because at the same time it was just that was right. Anyway, for those who don't know, we all knew it was going to be a bad move. Like, it takes Milan Lucic a while to get going, but then he's a runaway freight train. But then, at the same time, he's an out-of-control runaway freight train. And oh, look! That doesn't work!
And sadly, I think his season with the Kings, this is totally off-topic for everything we had possibly put on our agenda, but I feel like his season with the Kings was, like, his last even, like, semi-decent season. And then he just, like, collapsed into a pile of dust. So I feel like we at least got, like, one adequate season out of him. And then in, like, Dean Lombardi's smartest possible move, he didn't re-sign him.
Rumor has it that he tried really hard to re-sign him, and then it just kind of came down to the wire, and Lucic was like, all right, I'm tired of you messing around with me. Screw this. I'm out. I'm going to go test free agency. And then he tested free agency, and Wayne Gretzky was like, yo, go sign with the Oilers. And he was like, well, look, if Wayne Gretzky tells me something, I got to do it.
I mean, yeah, you do. It's kind of a rule.
I mean, is he like a mob boss now?
Yes.
Wayne Gretzky, the mob boss.
I would read an entire novel about that.
I think you should write it now.
I know what my project is for the next month or something.
Well, November is NaNoWriMo. That's what I call it.
Right.
There you go. National Novel Writing Month. I gave you a project for November.
Look out, Wayne Gretzky mob boss fan fiction. I'm coming for you.
Why not? You're not busy enough, Sarah.
No, not at all. I need sleep.
Sleep is for the weak. All right, now that we've segued completely off our planned topics, shall we segue back?
Yes.
All right, top five in order. We'll talk about these guys individually in a minute. But top five, number five was Austin Wagner. Number four was Jarrett Anderson Dolan. Number three was Cal Peterson. Number two, Adrian Kempe. And spoiler alert, number one was Alex Turcotte. We have spoken extensively about Alex Turcotte. We will continue to speak extensively about Alex Turcotte, our slightly undersized center boy from Wisconsin, or who is going to Wisconsin. I think he's from Illinois originally.
Yep.
Yes, yep. Good old Illinois boy. Good old Midwestern boy.
So, yeah, because we're all very excited about Turcotte, and I think that's pretty obvious from looking at the where everybody ranked him. He was ranked pretty high by most people. Very few people ranked him outside of the top 10.
I feel like there's always... it's always interesting to look at the results because I would love to like sit down and actually interview everyone who responds to these things. And I don't have the time to do that because I do actually need to sleep and go to my day job at some point.
Day job.
But, you know, every so often, you know, there's someone who ranks him like, you know, number 25. And I'm like, I'm very curious as to your methodology for how you put him there. And, you know, I know that some people prioritize players who have already pro experience or, you know, maybe they just really like big boys. I don't know. But, yeah, I mean, no surprise at all. It was very fairly consistent where everyone thought that he should have been ranked, and rightfully so. You know, he's not ready to make his NHL debut quite yet, but certainly is not particularly far away from that milestone.
I find it very interesting that the writers were almost 100% in agreement that he should be at least in the top two. Whereas, like, yeah, the fan rank was kind of all over the place, but predominantly number one. I mean, I know we can't talk to everybody, but it's still just, like, a very curious thing. And not to jump around a little bit, but I noticed the same thing, or at least a similar thing, when I was writing about Jarrett Anderson Nolan. Because there were a lot of people who ranked him, like, really low on the list. And I was going, I mean, he made his debut last year, and he didn't suck. I know he didn't score any points, but God, I don't think really anybody was scoring any points at the time that he made his debut. And then he got sent back to juniors because the Kings were really being giant losers. And that was something that then head coach John Stevens basically kind of alluded to Curtis Dzepke.
I think maybe next year, and if you're listening and you're into this idea, like, leave us a comment on the website or shout at us out at us on Twitter or something, and I'll keep it in mind for next year, is that maybe we add in a question that's like, I would like to talk to you more about my choices, and then we get a few random fans' perspectives on why they chose things the way they did. You know, I can certainly talk to the writers all day long about why did you make your choices, but getting the perspective of people who are new to us, you guys out there, our faithful readers slash listeners, I think would be kind of cool. So yeah, if you think that'd be a thing you'd want to participate in, or would be you wouldn't want to participate in, but hope that other people would, leave us a comment. I'd like to see what y'all think.
And we could do it also on the condition of anonymity, if you're like super bashful or something, and you're just like,
yeah, I'll make up a super rad, like, fake name for you, like Johnny Blades says that he doesn't think that, you know, Alex Turcotte is tall enough. Like, thanks, Johnny Blades.
I was just gonna go with super rad user 123. Yours is better.
What can I say? I try.
Unlike me. There goes my randomness again. all right. Let's talk about Cal Peterson. Actually, we'll get back to Peterson in a minute. Let's jump back to number five, Austin Wagner. Austin Wagner, big surprise, making a huge splash at number five on our top 25. Now, I'm looking at his rankings. Literally all over the map. Nobody knew where to rank Austin Wagner. They're like, what do I do with this Trevor Lewis 2.0, but redheaded and younger?
Yeah, this one was like the biggest surprise for me, possibly, of where people wound up. And I mean, I will let everyone in on a little bit of the secret of the methodology, is that the writers' votes do get weighted slightly heavier than the readers' votes, which is why some things are a little more tilted towards what the writers say. And that is a function of many reasons, which we will not get into here. But, you know, the writers, for the most part, had him, you know, there were several people who had him as number three, basically top 10. For the most part, of the writers' votes. And I think that really kind of swung him up. The readers' votes were a little more spread out across, you know, the top 18 is kind of where he got the most kind of cut off at. So I think that was a really interesting, usually I feel like it didn't really swing it that much, but the average reader positioning for him was seven. But the writers' votes kind of swung him up a little further. But yeah, it's really curious because he's a player who, you know, has the speed. He just, you know, he has the skating. He just doesn't necessarily have the finish yet. And yeah, I think his number five rating is a function of people hoping that he develops the hands. And if not, just being tantalized by having someone fast, which we have not really had too much of. So I hope he can live up to it. I think that he probably is set to make the opening night roster. Yeah, really curious because he just is still working on that finish and hasn't quite put his whole game together yet. But he's still a kid, sort of-ish. 22 is still young in sports, I think. He's not a grizzled 25-year-old.
Unlike Toffoli. I don't know how old Toffoli is. I think he's like 27 now, but it's just like, I remember when he hit 20, like 25, I was like, all right, you're not a kid anymore. Let's go. Like, what? But he had like 2 seasons to be a kid. I don't understand this. And now it's crazy.
He still looks like a baby.
Well, yes, that's true. But the crazy part for me is that now he's supposed to be like a veteran leader. Just like, cannot wrap my brain around this.
And I also don't think he's on board with being a veteran leader. I feel like he's not quite there yet.
I mean, okay, to be fair, he's had 5 seasons. So really 5.5 because he came up a bunch during the lockout shortened season in 2013. That's when he made his initial NHL debut. So it's just like he's been around for kind of forever. A while. Forever. No, not forever. Okay, back to Wagner, since we love to get off topic on her. We should call this the off topic podcast. God. Anyway, Wagner, I like to call him Trevor Lewis 2.0. There was a quote that from one of his junior teammates that said that for like every 3 breakaways that he gets, he might score on one of them. I don't even know if 3 is the right number, but it was just like he gets so many breakaways and he might score on like one of them.
Tries hard, loves the game.
Trevor Lewis 2.0. I love them both, okay? Please do not yell at me on Twitter or in the comments that, like, I'm ragging on Trevor Lewis. Like, first of all, Trevor Lewis knows exactly, well, he doesn't care. He's getting paid millions of dollars. He's got an awesome wife and some incredible twins. Like, why the hell does he care about some random blogger's opinion of him? But I love Trevor Lewis. I do. And I'm sure I will love Austin Wagner the more he is on the team. It's just, you know, this team has too many of the same type of player where they're semi-versatile. They just can't score. This team was 30th in scoring. They were 2nd worst in scoring. They beat out the Ducks by 4 goals. Okay, you guys, like 4 goals. And I think that was like 1 game where they beat the Ducks. I think it was 3 goals. And they beat the Ducks like 4-1 or something. That was the difference between the Kings and the Ducks being the worst teams offensively last year.
Such an adventure. It's that Southern California solidarity.
To be fair, the Ducks were all babies and then all their veterans and good players were hurt. We didn't have that excuse. We just sucked. I just want to see the Kings score a few goals. Like, is it too much to ask?
Yes.
Apparently. Okay. We talked a little bit about Jarrett Anderson Dolan. I think we covered him. We don't know exactly what's going to happen with him this year. He's going to be in Ontario because he's 20 now. So that means he doesn't have to go back to juniors. Will he see NHL time? I don't know. That is a giant question mark. Of course, it's going to be up to Todd McClellan and Rob Blake. And, you know, there's injury limitations and whatnot. But is it worth it? Or should they continue to look at some of their other prospects who maybe aren't as, I don't want to say good, but, you know, the Wagners and I think he's a defenseman though. Anyways, but
yeah,
I mean,
Walker. Yeah.
Yes, Walker. God, how are you in my brain? yeah, Sean Walker and Matt Luff. Like, should they utilize call-ups more for those guys and just let Anderson Dolan develop more his pro game under Mike Stuther's tutelage? I don't know. It's obviously not for me to say, but I'm very curious about what the Kings are going to do with him this year.
Yeah, I feel like he's probably on the short list of guys to get called up if there's an injury in the forwards. You know, I think a lot of the projected lineups have been kind of using like Matt Luff as like the 13th forward kind of guy. So he may be with the Kings anyway. But I could see Anderson Dolan being someone who they call up even just to give him a couple of games, like, you know, especially if they're not doing particularly well, and just want to start getting more looks at guys. I don't know that I think that he will probably be one of the last people to be cut from training camp. But I think it's better for him to be the most of the time in Ontario playing really big minutes, playing on the power play and everything. But they'd be crazy not to call him up if they have a need for a player and they're actually going to play him and not just sit him in the box while other people do things.
Counterpoint, the Kings are losers.
Accurate.
That is not my quote. That is Curtis Zupke's quote, okay? So, like, don't yell at me. Okay, moving on. Cal Peterson. Mystery because of the Campbell signing. But I think this is... I think this is his last year that he is waiver exempt, right?
According to everything the great people at Cap Friendly say, yes, that is correct.
So, mystery intensifies. What are they going to do with Cal Peterson? Obviously, he's gone in and he's grabbed that number one spot in Ontario. I know he had a few inconsistencies in his game last year that he was working out with Dusty. Again, shout out to Dusty over in China. This time I got the geography right. We miss you, Dusty. Please come back to us soon. Anyway, so... but he also came up and he started a couple of games for the Kings and he didn't suck.
Yeah, I think he's really intriguing. It'll be interesting to see if Ontario's any better this year. He struggled a lot last year because Ontario was so bad. And, you know, it wasn't like he was having like a complete breakdown in fundamentals. It wasn't like his whole game fell apart. He just played behind a real bad team. So, of course, his numbers just were probably the worst in the league, which was a pretty sharp turn from a guy who his rookie year was, you know, named the All-Star game and was one of the best goalies, but was also playing behind a much better Ontario Reign team. So I think that it's the best thing for him to stay in Ontario this year and be the starter and be the guy who plays all of the games. And it's, you know, also the best thing that neither Quick nor Campbell get hurt and end up missing huge chunks of the season, because that would also kind of derail his development if he has to come up just to sit on the bench. But I think he has a lot of promise, and hopefully with a slightly better, more offensively minded, perhaps, Ontario Reign team, they won't stink so bad and he will not look like a really bad goalie, because we know he isn't. He just, oh boy, it was a bad year for everyone.
Well, it's an interesting thing, and this apparently happens with a lot of goaltenders. Not all of them, but it does happen quite frequently where, you know, like they shine in juniors or in college, struggle a bit in the AHL. And then they come up to the NHL and you're like, wait, how is this the same player who looked like crap in the American Hockey League? But then you come up to the best league in the world and you are like the Pittsburgh goalie who is the first rookie to win the Stanley Cup twice in a row.
I mean, the real answer is that goalies are magic, but there's probably also other answers too.
Yes, goalies are magic. But, you know, I think it's worth, at least for the Kings, keeping Peterson in Ontario this year to let him play and just wait for a quick injury. It's not inevitable. Please don't yell at me. But it kind of is. When was the last time Jonathan Quick played a full healthy season? I think it was like 2015? No, I think he was hurt at the beginning of 2015. I honestly don't know.
He's so sad. He's so broken.
Well, I mean, his style just basically breaks down his entire body.
Oh, our poor broken goalie.
Yeah.
So
the rankings for Peterson, you know, they're really interesting because the majority ranked him really within the top five. Like, the vast, vast majority ranked him within the top nine. But the majority, like the simple majority, ranked him really in the top, ranked him in the top five. Most of the writers actually ranked him at number five.
There's something to be said for consistency, I guess.
yeah. Well, and
I did a little Google, and Jonathan Quick actually has surprisingly played a lot of games lately, which is maybe why his body is falling apart. He had 72 games in 2014-15, 68 the next season, and then the season after that is the one where he got hurt in like the very first game, so he played 17 games. 2017-18 he played 64, which is I think he was hurt for a little bit that year, but not like hugely hurt. And then last year, of course, 46 games, because he again got broken immediately at the beginning of the season. Notice a trend.
He should not start the season anymore.
There's one way to fix the problem. Be like, you don't get to play until like a weekend. Just chill.
Just like, we'll ease you in. We're not, you know, we got lots of time, Quickie. It's okay. You're still number one in our hearts, buddy. Like, we still love you. Don't worry about it. Like, we're just going to let this guy get behind this awful team while they learn how to figure out how to play hockey again and shake off the rust. Like, it's cool. It's cool. Don't hurt yourself. Sitting on the bench. Opening that door. Don't do it. When was the year, though, that, like, everybody was breaking their groin? I think that was the, like, Quick hurt himself, then Campbell hurt himself. Or no, sorry. Zadkov hurt himself, then Campbell, and then it was Budaj, and then it was Jonah Emu.
Yeah, I think that was 16-17, the game where he, the year where he only played 17 games.
The year of the strained grain.
Yeah, because he got hurt. Zadkov was bad and hurt. Budaj ended up having to play like almost the whole season. And that was the year that they like traded for Ben Bishop for reasons. And then he went away. But yeah, that was bad. And then like, and then there were like no goalies in the AHL because all of them were up in the NHL because everyone was broken. And yeah, we had to have Jonah and Dusty Emu play a game.
Yeah, and then Jonah Emu, he also had a groin strain in that game. And so like, okay, so what happened was Jonathan Quick was hurt, and then Campbell was recalled. And then Zadkov got hurt, and then Campbell played, and then he got hurt. And then I was like, okay, Campbell, I know you're trying to emulate your idol here, but like that's a little too much. And then because Campbell was in the NHL. Wait, maybe Campbell didn't get hurt. I think. Anyway, Budaj, he was playing, and then he hurt his groin. And then Jonah Emu hurt his groin. So it was the year of the strained groin. Goalies, gird your loins, okay? Gird your groins.
Ba-dum-bum.
just protect yourselves, goalies, okay? Okay, number two, our favorite Swede. He is 23 today. Happy birthday, our favorite Swedish child, Adrian Kempe. The very, very extra child.
I honestly kind of expected to see him a little lower in the rankings. And he was a little, the average reader ranking was 4. So, you know, not significantly lower, but I just feel like anytime you tweet or write about Adrian Kempe, you just get a bunch of very angry people being like, he's bad and he shouldn't be a center and he, you know, isn't good at this and that and the other thing. And yet he still averaged out to be the number two writer on the list. And, you know, for the readers, you know, the average, like I said, was number 4, but the number 2 slot is the slot that had the most people, you know, where the most people voted him in at, for the readers. So this was actually really curious to me, because I expected him to be a little further down just because people are just always on him about not being good. I personally put him as third, and even that I kind of wrestled with a little bit, but I was like, no, he like provides value. Yeah, the argument is he doesn't make the people around him better, but you know, he's also still, he's just 23 now. You know, he still has a lot of things to learn. And as people have pointed out, he actually is much better on defense than you think he is. It's actually one of his stronger areas. And he just needs to put it all together. But yeah, I mean, he, you know, the team has, you know, given him this new contract, kind of a little bit of a show us what you can do. And, you know, whether what line he's going to play on and who his line mates are going to be, I think will, you know, dictate a lot about how we look at him in the future and what kind of player he is. But yeah, I think that if you're voting strictly on hair flips, he should be number one, but you know, that wasn't really the criteria. So here we are.
I was having a conversation about Kempe on Twitter, and it was pointed out to me again that surprisingly, yes, as you mentioned, that his defense is actually way better than people give him credit for. And as for making people around him better, I mean, okay, that's kind of a catch 22, I feel like, because it's like generally a player who makes other players better, unless you are magical and you're Patrice Bergeron, but generally your own statistics will go, your like possession and other things and your goal scoring and everything like that, those tend to go down just a little bit because you're more focused on your line mates and improving your line mates. But to Kempe's credit, he made Kovalchuk look good. And I didn't know that was possible because, God, Kovalchuk was awful. Like, straight up just really freaking bad last year.
If you look at his Instagram, though, he looks like he's going to be the guy who comes into camp in the best shape of his life. So,
Dustin Brown 2.0.
Yeah, maybe we'll see a total turnaround or something. Who knows?
Who knows what T-Mac can do with him? But we'll see. There were some interesting quotes coming out of camp regarding Todd McClellan. But yeah, so I'm really looking forward to Kempe. He is only 23. He still has tons of room to grow. And actually, I really liked his line of Toffoli, Grundstrom, and Kempe. I thought, like, it had shades of that 70s line where they had just enough defense to not make me want to pull my hair out. But when they are on offense and they're cycling and, you know, they're clicking, it's like, wow, you know, they actually are creating chaos, but like in the best possible way.
Yeah, and not that one day of training camp means literally anything, and anyone who's reading much into day one of training camp, like, may need other hobbies. But today, Kempe skated on a line with Kovalchuk and Toffoli. He centered both of them. So, you know, so some of the lines in camp, and we'll probably talk about camp pretty shortly, but some of them look familiar, like Iafallo Kopitar Brown, like they skated on a line together. So if that is a preview of what we may get, perhaps Kempe is going to continue making Kovalchuk look better next season, this season, really.
I have mixed feelings about that. All right. Number one, as we mentioned, Alex Turcotte, overwhelming majority voted him as number one. He's our shiny new boy. So we've talked about him extensively in the past. And Sarah has many, many plans to stalk him this season because she is our hockey nerd, our resident hockey nerd. And apparently she has no other hobbies besides hockey, and we love her dearly for it.
Yeah. I like road trips and road trips. So we'll see.
You like road trips and hockey.
Just combine all the great things.
Yeah, why not? All right. Speaking of camp. So, and some of the interesting quotes that came out today. Drew Doughty. Well, you couldn't expect anything less from Drew Doughty other than total and complete honesty. I think my favorite quote from Drew today. Drew, not holding back. These are quotes tweeted from John Hovind, the mayor. He said, the last 4 years have been shit. And then he went on to say things were really bad at the end of last season. The past is the past. I want to make this team great again. Quote unquote. So, Drew Doughty, never holding back. Yeah. You know, I think he's not wrong.
Yeah, I was sitting at work today just watching, you know, doing my actual job, but also with an eye on the Twitter, and saw all those quotes starting to come in. And I was just like, ooh, look at all those feelings from Drew. He certainly, yeah, is not one who's known for mincing words or trying to put things politely. He just sort of says what's on his mind. And love him or hate him, you got to respect that he at least is a good quote. And even if you don't agree with the quotes and just think he like sounds stupid, it still gives you something to talk about and, you know, chew on. So we will always have that from Drew Doughty, is his ability to just say whatever's on his mind, even if maybe he shouldn't be. But yeah, he definitely very honest today when they were asking him about, you know, about last year and his thoughts on, you know, he basically came out and said like, yeah, this team has been crap for years. And I'm like, all right, Drew, tell him how you feel. So he certainly had some choice words, and we'll see if he can back them up in a mature and professional way and not a like helmet throwing tantrum way. So we'll see which Drew we actually get this year.
I like this quote. We still think we can compete and earn a playoff spot. Drew! Like, have you... He just said that the team was utter crap, and now you are like, but we can still get a playoff spot. Like,
it seems like no one told him the plan.
What, the plan, like, to suck for 2 years?
I know that, like, Rob Blake has been intentionally vague about what the plan is, but we all know that the plan is be bad for another year, probably get another really good draft pick, and then go from there. No one has told Drew that, I guess.
Either that, he's an eternal optimist.
That's putting it nicely.
Well, I don't know if there's any other good way to put it. So it looks like, as you mentioned earlier, Brown was skating on a line with Kopitar. And then according to John Hovind, based on early chats with McClellan, he's expected to start the season with his old pal again. But we shall see.
Yeah, and I like the fact that McClellan started camp today with a scrimmage, and I know that there have been some quotes, you know, from him or talking about him basically saying that he wants to see with his own eyes, you know, and we all know it's just training camp and no one's giving 100% except for like the kids who want to make the team, but that he really wanted to not rely on what he'd been told from anyone about how players play or how they click together on the ice or whatever. And he wanted to, before they even got into drills and teaching, he just wanted to see what they had. So I thought that was a really interesting way to approach it, and that hopefully he learned a handful of things that will be helpful to him. It seemed like from the tweets that I saw about the scrimmage this morning, it seemed like a high scoring affair. I know Kovalchuk scored at least a couple of times in the scrimmage. So not that that again means literally anything, but he did a thing. He showed up, he tried real hard. So
I expect it'll be interesting to watch. I expect this to be the highlight of this year. that's the most goals he's going to score all year. The two in training camp. I'm the worst. But McClellan did have some interesting quotes about the rookies. I shouldn't say that. But McClellan did talk about the rookies, and he said he liked what he saw from Kovalchuk. But he also said that he liked, according to John Hovind, McClellan praised Lizotte, Chad, and Anderson for their performances in Irvine, which is no surprise because they are among really the top prospects in LA's pipeline. Lizotte even got himself into one whole game last year.
Yeah, way to burn that ELC. He's definitely has stood out through all of these rookie games and through even the beginning of camp as someone who really put in the work in the off season to, you know, be prepared to come in for the first day of camp. So, you know, I think he's another guy on the short list of, you know, probably is going to get sent to Ontario at the end of the preseason. But if he, you know, continues to impress the way he is now, would be a pretty quick call up if they need other bodies who, again, will actually play and not just sit there. But that was kind of surprising. I thought he was fine in his one game that he played, but you know, that's like the smallest of small sample sizes and he's a small guy. So you never really know how well he's going to hold up or how well that he's going to fit in, but everyone seems to be really excited about him. So maybe he's the under the radar pick for the year of players to look at.
Is Mikey Anderson going back to the Bulldogs this year? He signed an ELC, so that negates his eligibility, doesn't it?
Yeah, he's going pro. He had 3 years of college, and now he is ours. And he's definitely on my defenseman watch list of he's a guy that like has adapted very quickly and has succeeded at every level he's played at. And if he looks as good in Ontario as everyone sort of seems to think he will, could easily be someone who gets caught up. Knowing that both Paul Ledoux and Derek Forbert are dealing with injuries that might, Forbert especially, that might keep them out of play for the first couple games, could maybe be someone who gets to stay on the team a little longer. He is done with college because the value of a 4-year degree apparently means nothing to hockey players, and is going pro.
I mean, it only took Alec Martinez like 10 years to finish his last year of college.
That's my favorite story. He tried so hard and it's adorable.
I love it. And then he surprised his parents by showing them his degree. I was like, oh my God, that is the sweetest thing ever.
Some of them are good boys.
I feel like Alec Martinez has always been a good boy. Like, I feel like he's genuinely just, like, a very kind-hearted person. Some other people, namely defensemen who wear a letter, maybe not so much. Not naming names.
No one ever tell me if Alec Martinez isn't a good boy. Like, just don't tell me. Like, I don't want to know.
I don't want to know. I'd like to live forever in my fantasy that he is forever a kind-hearted person. Are there any other quotes that you want to talk about, Sarah? Anything else that you noticed from camp today?
No, I feel like it was really just Drew Doughty having a lot of feelings.
When doesn't Drew Doughty have a lot of feelings, though?
Maybe when he's sleeping?
Hard to say. Well, all right. So let's look ahead to the future. Ontario probably is going to consist of Jad, Lizotte, Anderson, Yakeem Ryan, the other guy they signed on free agency frenzy.
Martin Furk.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
He's, as you can tell, he's very memorable. So those guys are on my short list of ones who are probably going to be in Ontario. I don't think that they are going to make the cut. Wagner or Luff, I'm on the fence about.
Yeah, I feel like the good thing with both of them is that they have the flexibility to go up and down on waivers, so it could be a lot of shuffling back and forth. I feel like, if anything, Wagner has the inside track just because he played most consistently in the NHL last season and is the kind of guy who, like, you can put him on your line with Trevor Lewis and Cal Clifford and they might actually make something happen, and if not, they're just going to be really annoying to the opponent. And I feel like he could kind of fulfill that role. I feel like Luff is definitely a guy who's always kind of streaky, and like all players are, so that's not anything special, but he's someone who I could see going back and forth a lot just to, like, you know, keep him from sitting on the bench in Los Angeles and just send him down to Ontario for a couple weeks, make him play a bunch of games, then bring him back up. You know, should he be on the Kings? Probably, but, you know, there's only so many roster spots available to have bodies for.
Well, and I feel like Amadio has to come up. Well, Amadio has to come out because he's literally out of waiver options. And this is a team that has absolutely no center depth. So it would be really stupid for them to send him back or to try and sneak him through waivers. So, I mean, that eliminates automatically one spot right there. So how many spots really... I think there's probably two or three spots that are really up for grabs. And I think Amadio has one of them.
This is like the worst Hunger Games.
No comment. Real quickly before we wrap up, the babies in their rookie games, were they bad or what?
They won one.
They were Vegas blown out.
Vegas
your other
didn't
two.
Win any. Vegas didn't win any games. So there.
So there, Vegas. We finally beat you at something.
But I mean, I will say in their defense that, you know, the first game that they played was against the Ducks, which they lost 4-1. And the Ducks have a very stacked rookie team. I think the number of games, NHL games played by guys on that team was like 200 something. And the Kings had like 6 games and they all belonged to Jared Anderson Dolan. So the Ducks were clearly working with a more NHL pro ready team than any of the other teams in the tournament. And so that game they lost, they did very, very poorly. The next game, they just trounced the Avalanche rookies. They won 6-1. And then the final game against the Sharks, like, started poorly. They got in like a 4-0 hole or something like that. And then no, it was a 5-0 hole. Yeah. They allowed 5 goals in the first period. But to their credit, and I think this is something we didn't necessarily see from the Kings rookie team last year, whenever they lost all of their games, is they actually fought back, and they ended up scoring 3 goals, which obviously was not enough to win. But like, there was some fight in them, and they didn't just kind of like give up, which is what it felt like they did last season. And so like, yeah, they didn't win. And they didn't necessarily look particularly good or consistent. But the players who you expected to shine kind of are the ones who, you know, did what they were supposed to do and, you know, were noticeable. And I think says a lot about, you know, the leadership of some of these guys and their ability to bounce back from bad situations in games. So, my cat has joined me on the table, so sorry.
Hello, kitty cat.
Yeah, so yeah, they did not do well at all, but compared to last year, they did much better, and they at least showed some promise. So I won't get on them too bad.
And I mean, to be honest, like, they're one-off games, so they don't really mean a whole lot. And I feel like the Sharks also have more kids who are at least closer to NHL ready. Because I think there was quite a few, like, really young guys. Well, I shouldn't say really young. I mean, like, they're all between the ages of 18 and 23. But I feel like there was really quite a few of, like, first and second year guys, maybe a few like first year pros, but not.
I remember looking at the Sharks roster before the last game, and they definitely had a handful of guys who, you know, their previous team was an AHL or ECHL team. So, looking at the Sharks roster, there were a lot of guys who their last team was an AHL team or an ECHL team. So, even they're all guys roughly around the same age, there was a certain subset of them who had a lot of pro experience under their belt already. And the Kings had a handful of those guys, but not too many of them, and not too many prominent players who had already had pro experience. So, you know, could have been better, but also could have been worse. They could have gotten shut out all 3 games, and that would have been sad.
That is true. I feel like, pipeline wise, the Kings have improved in 1 year, which is good, but I also feel like this kind of shows that there's still a ways to go in rebuilding this team, because they don't have a lot of blue chip prospects. But I guess you really can't have a lot of blue chip prospects when your team is old. They all have NTCs or NMCs in Kopitar's case, and they're all signed to extraordinarily lengthy contracts that will never end in the face of this earth.
Yeah, the downside of trading away your picks and your prospects in order to get NHL-ready guys is that you eventually wind up with no prospects. And so, yeah, there's many things to be question Rob Blake about, and what his vision is and how well he's doing as a GM. But he certainly has been doing his part to make sure that the Kings actually have prospects again. It just so happens that most of ours are still very young and not close to being to going pro yet. So, you know, that's where you definitely see the disadvantage that the team is at of, you know, having guys who will come up soon, like, you know, Kaliev and, you know, Turcotte, who didn't participate in this, but they'll be very good players. They just are still children because we didn't have draft picks for many years.
Well, we had them. We just gave them away. Gave them away. Never forget when the Kings traded, oh gosh, who was it? Their little Russian kid, Valentin Zikov, and I think it was the first round pick that was a different trade. I'm sorry. I was thinking about the Sekera trade. And since we ended up trading with Carolina twice, both the trades have become convoluted in my head. And I'm confused now as to who went over when. But yeah, so we gave up a lot for Sekera. And then the Kings played Chicago, and Chicago was like, no, we don't like you. So we're going to, you know, step on you. And he got hurt in that game, and I was really mad.
That was probably my fault somehow.
Yes, you didn't know it yet, but it was totally your fault. It was the beginning of the downfall.
My bad. Oops.
Yeah, but that was like also the beginning of like Dean Lombardi's like really obvious downfall, where you're looking at him going, what are you doing? Like, at the time, and looking back on the trade in hindsight, I didn't think it was bad. I thought it was a necessary move because the Kings had really, really awful players. And they had no defensemen. So I thought it wasn't bad. It was just a series of other moves that were bad. It was just like, oh, Lombardi, what are you doing? Like, you know, Lucic. That was bad. That was not good. All right. Well, I think we've spoken off topic quite enough. So, anything else that you want to talk about or address tonight, Sarah?
Let's go preseason. We've got games, and maybe they won't lose all of them. And there's many less of those ridiculous split squad games this year. So the team will actually all be playing together, except for, I think there's one split squad game, which is fine. Like, let all of the children play before we send them back home. So preseason, and then coming up right before the regular season starts, we're going to have some preview pieces looking at the team, looking at who, you know, what we can expect out of guys and who's going to be playing where and with who. And we'll also have a preview looking at the rest of the division and the league. So that's coming up. Right before the season starts. So we've got lots of cool stuff coming towards you.
Yes, indeed. I'm hoping to get another podcast in before the season starts. And then podcast schedule once the season starts is TBD. But I'm shooting for biweekly. We'll see. It may end up being more monthly again. But, you know, we'll see. If you guys, as usual, have any questions, definitely hit us up on Twitter. Comments, if you want to be on the podcast, give me a shout. I am at Robin_JFTC. Sarah is at Go or Go Ahead. And as always, we have our JFTC Twitter account, which is JFTC_Kings. So, don't be shy. Hit us up. Or feel free to comment on, you know, any of the top 25, under 25, and we love to interact with you guys. So thanks again for joining me tonight, Sarah.
Thanks for having me.
All right.